This episode of the Ottawa Entrepreneurs Podcast is brought to you by Extension Marketing, the marketing agency that specializes in unique needs and budgets of small to medium-sized businesses. They provide turnkey marketing solutions that get results. You can find out more today at extmarketing.ca. Now here's your host, Pat Whalen.
This episode of the Ottawa Entrepreneurs Podcast features Sari Cantor. She's a partner with Recruiting in Motion, an Ottawa-based recruiting company. Sari's an expert and public speaker in all areas of job search, labor trends, and hiring strategies. I hope you enjoy the show. First of all, Sari, thanks for joining us. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me, Pat.
For our listeners that may not have heard of Recruiting in Motion, can you tell us a little bit about your company? What is it you do and how you got started?
Yeah, we are a recruiting firm, but unique to Ottawa. We're what I like to call a three-dimensional recruiting firm. So we're actually the only local recruiting firm here in Ottawa that specializes in professional services that utilizes video integration tools to be able to offer our clients and our candidates an opportunity to see people and their resumes prior to hiring them, helping them streamline their recruitment process.
How do you find that, Sari? Do you get people that are uncomfortable? Like, not everyone's comfortable being in front of a camera. How do you, is that causing any issues for you?
Yeah, well, this is very new. And so every day that we meet somebody, we have to educate them on, you know, why we're doing this. But at the end of the day, I think from a company perspective, there's obviously a value because they don't have to weed through 100 candidates. But from a candidate perspective or a job seeker's perspective, you can appreciate that sending your resume in somewhere and getting it lost in an applicant tracking system isn't netting results for the job seeker either. And so in an effort to, have them stand out and out above everybody else, or give them a leg up, or literally physically put them and have them market brand themselves into the job is something that they can wrap their heads around because they're not doing it currently and they're aggressively looking for work.
Right. So are you the only one in Ottawa offering this service right now?
We are. We're the only one in Ottawa that allows for the candidates to be videoed while they come in and do the interview process with us. And to be clear, it really is only a 1 to 2 minute capture. So you're not watching 45 minutes of each candidate. And the intent isn't to sell the candidate into a job. It's to give the hiring manager an idea of who owns the resume, who's coming in to see me for this interview. And so, yeah, sometimes we do a lot around the preparation of the candidate for the video. We go over the questions with them. It's not scripted. It's much like a two-way conversation so that we can just get an idea of not just the technical skills of the candidate, but also the personality and what their job motivations are.
And Sari, your background is in recruiting?
It is. I've got almost 17 to 20 years now working in recruiting. I've worked for a large multinational company, and my expertise has really been starting on more the administrative side. But in the latter years, I've done the technical recruiting side, and most recently, what I would consider professional services. So recruiting and accounting and finance, HR, communications, technology, and legal services.
And how long has Recruiting in Motion, how long have you been involved with the company?
So this is my baby. I've taken the rights of this company out of Toronto and brought it here to Ottawa. We've been in the Ottawa market now. It'll be about 2.5 years. We've grown from 0 to 6 people starting in January in that time frame. We have been able to not just work with large companies in the Ottawa area, but really get to know some of the smaller businesses as well in a business-to-business relationship. And our firm really focuses more on long-term HR partnerships with our clients and talent acquisition partnerships than necessarily a sales approach to and a voluminous approach.
So, 17 to, that's a lot of years in that industry. What made you decide to go into business for yourself?
Oh, well, it's the most empowering decision I think I've ever made, but the driver really was understanding that the recruiting industry has been changing. The mentality of how people go about doing business business behaviors and purchasing behaviors have changed. And I felt that we were coming to a crossroad where the industry was really changing with respect to technology integrations, how people go about their talent acquisition, that there was a different way and hopefully a better way of going about doing business.
And you're talking a little bit about some of the changes or shifts you've seen in the industry. What has been the major one? Is it on the technical side of things?
Well, I mean, Pat, when I started in this business back in the late 90s, we used to get resumes through fax machines. So I didn't have a computer. We didn't have a desktop. I had a stack of paper and a fax machine. So technology can take on so many different forms, whether it's just simplicity of people emailing in their resumes to applicant tracking systems to social media and LinkedIn. That's part of the technological advancements we've seen and how people can go about finding talent as opposed to relying on what was traditionally the faxed in resume. But some of the other significant changes that we see in our industry are things like a labor shortage in skilled labor, turnover in jobs simply because the demographics and different generations don't stay in jobs as long as they once did. And so the significant changes, while technology has had an impact, I think society and economics have also played a role in that as well.
You mentioned skilled labor. Why do you think there's a shortage in that? Is it just a function of young people not wanting to get into the trades? Is that what you mean by skilled labor?
No, I mean skilled labor professional services. So anything that would be where not trade labor necessarily, although there is a shortage in that as well, but skilled labor being accountants, IT professionals, et cetera, where if you look at the unemployment rate here in Ottawa, it's somewhere usually around 6.5, 6.8, but nationally it hovers between 7 and 7.2. But if you actually break down that demographic into people who take out the people who can't work, aren't employable, or aren't eligible to work, you realize you're dealing with a very small pool of candidates that are actually unemployed and looking for work. So it gets harder and harder to pull people from jobs. It gets harder to find the talent. And then once you find it, again, you have to have the lure to pull them out. And there's a time constraint to that.
Are you finding, Sari, that the people are more mobile now? In other words, are you drawing people from outside of Ottawa for Ottawa-based positions that you can't fill with local people?
Absolutely. So to say that we can't fill them with local people probably isn't totally accurate, because I think there's a lot of really good talent in the Ottawa area. But our market here in Ottawa is very different than any other marketplace across the country. We are a government town. About 40% of our labor market here is made up of the government. And so sometimes we just can't find the skill set we may need for a private sector organization in our labor market. So there's times recently, I think it's well documented, there's a lot of people from Western Canada, Calgary, Edmonton, Alberta, that are very open to migrating out either further west or out east. There's a lot of people in the greater Toronto area where the cost of living has just gotten to a place where it's no longer affordable and they'd rather have a different lifestyle for themselves. And then you have people both in Eastern Canada and in Quebec where there's a draw to come to Ottawa because of the bilingual factor or their inability to be able to work in Quebec or the options for them available in the East Coast. So there's a lot of movement here to Ottawa, more than I think I've seen ever in my last 15 to 20 years.
Well, you know, we've talked about this before, but I'm born and raised in Ottawa. And it's a unique town. Mm-hmm. It's a small, big town. So I would think it would be very attractive for a lot of people from, you know, other parts of the country. It's interesting to hear that. So you've talked about some of the shifts that you've seen, you know, so far in your industry. What about in the next sort of 3 to 5 years? Is there anything, any one or two shifts you see coming your way?
Absolutely. So, as I indicated, we use a video integrated solution for interviews, but in finding ways to integrate that third dimension, that human element into people's processes, whether it's from the onset, whether we continue to evolve Skype, we continue to evolve our social media and our social media to allow us to interact with potential employees, for potential employees to be able to interact or interface with existing employees within an organization to understand corporate culture, things like hiring trends. You know, we're in a new political climate here in Ottawa that is going to change hiring here in the next 3 to 4 years. So I think we'll see a lot of different trends when it comes to the way people go about hiring and the kind of people we're going to be hiring. We keep talking about baby boomers retiring. Not all of them have retired, not even close. And so we're continuing to shift towards their retirement is going to redefine what our workforce looks like.
And do you find companies are more willing to invest in we'll call them older employees, sort of 60 plus perhaps, that are still, they still want to stay active and still want to be in the workforce? Is there a movement towards companies spending money retraining
these
individuals?
You know, I've had in a lot of cases, I don't even know if it's a retraining. And the answer to your question is, I really hope so, I think when people become a little bit more mature in their careers, it isn't about redefining their skill set. It's about understanding what their value proposition is. Meaning somebody is hiring somebody who's got 30, 40 years of accrued experience already because they're looking for that expertise. They're not looking for you to learn a new software. They're looking for the experience, the credibility that comes with that individual and their amount of experience. So the biggest challenge I find with that demographic isn't that there isn't work out there. It's how they brand themselves for their potential job markets. There is a very real value proposition for a mature employee in the workplace, which is, you know, they don't turn around that often. They're not like millennials that continue to move every 2 to 3 years. So if you bring somebody in for 5 to 7 years in the latter stages of their career, you know they're likely going to stay 5 to 7 years. And for a small business owner or for an entrepreneur, that's actually a really good feeling that you don't have to have the cost of turnover because they'll likely stay.
Yeah, that's a good point. It's interesting, but I'm still trying to understand. So are the challenges for the older worker is that's great. They have, you know, the experience. They don't move around. I understand that, but how do they stay on top of the technology and the various changes?
So, you know, the first piece is that I think most people that get to the latter stage of their career have the technology in terms of updated software knowledge. That's something that everybody should remain in current. It doesn't matter if you're 60 or you're 20. Everybody needs to maintain currency and technical savviness. Where I think the more mature candidate doesn't have the same competitive advantage as perhaps the millennial generation is their use of social media, their use of technology to help them find work. Meaning that, you know, everybody else is on LinkedIn. They know how to connect. They're all on Facebook. They're all speaking instantaneously. They're following Twitter. Whereas, you know, even if I look at my father and his generation, he just got onto Facebook, just got onto LinkedIn. And so it means their usage of it and their ability to navigate through it is probably not as savvy as those that are maybe a little bit younger than them.
It's interesting. I've I've worked with a number of different companies, and one in particular, you know, it's a person my age in their 50s, and mm-hmm. he is so up to speed on technology. It's incredible. He just genuinely has a passion for it. And I think that's part of a requirement for learning anything, quite frankly. So interesting. Mm-hmm. I want to shift focus a little bit and talk a bit more about on the entrepreneurial side of things. Mm-hmm. You know, as an entrepreneur yourself, you have to wear many hats. How do you go about your time management or prioritizing your day?
I preface by saying I'm not the most organized person out there. So I try to keep things really simple. I do maintain an agenda. I schedule things in my agenda in terms of not just my professional requirements and commitments, but also my personal ones. But every morning I come into work and I scribble down a to-do list. And I don't leave until the to-do list is highlighted from top to bottom. And it's designed so that nothing gets pushed forward for the next day. The other thing I do is I'm a morning person. So I'm typically up at 5 o'clock in the morning. So by the time I get to work around 8 or 8:30, I have nothing in my inbox. So my day starts fresh when I sit down, or maybe not nothing, but nothing that I should have actioned before. Everything that still needs to be actioned that day might be sitting there, but I keep and I maintain really every hour of every day planned so that I don't get off. And every phone call I schedule is typically planned because I'm also not at my desk every day. And little things like playing phone tag and calling people back and responding to emails, those little things can suck the life out of you. So if you plan for all of them, you know, when can you speak today? When's a convenient time? Can put it into my agenda, respond to the emails in the morning so that they don't, you know, suck the life out of you all day long, helps you be much more productive with the day-to-day activity you need to do to actually do your job.
So when you're up at five, are you logging in from home just to try to clear out emails? Is that one of your priorities before you actually get into the office?
Absolutely. So you don't have to be a morning person. You could be an evening person. And before you go to bed at night, you log in one more time and take a look at what's in that inbox and clean it out. But you know, I wake up in the morning, grab my coffee, sit down on my laptop or my iPad. It doesn't matter. We're so mobile now that it's just a quick scan of what I need to do. Is there anything here that came in the evening that I need to deal with before I get into work? Is there anything that's just easy, quick response to, like, when can you come in for an interview that is easier for me to do and 5 seconds now than it is once I get into work and I have staff that need me and colleagues and people who are calling me. The phone becomes your worst enemy because people call you and it's not planned. So, you know, the more you can plan every other activity and clean out all the other stuff over your day is when you can get into work, focus on whatever that job is, whether it's sales or it's recruiting or it's accounting, and then deal with the discretionary disturbances or discretionary needs as they come up.
So do you, you know, I'm a big believer in entrepreneurs trying to stress to them that they need to spend some time daily, weekly, monthly, however they want to schedule, but working on their business, not just in their business, that famous Michael Gerber. How do you do that yourself?
So I confess I have an amazing support system. And I think it's really critical for entrepreneurs to understand that just because you're very good at what you do for a living doesn't mean you're great at running a business. And those are two fundamentally different things that I came to learn. I was a very strong recruiter, probably a pretty good salesperson. But that didn't necessarily translate into being a successful business owner. So, you know, I think the one mistake we tend to make as business owners or as entrepreneurs is that we know everything.
Right.
So my key to success is, or at least everything about our business, is to surround myself with people that know far more in other areas and can contribute than I can. And, you know, the best example I can give is my husband is a finance professional. He does all my back office. He does the books. He does my network security. He does my procurement of office supplies, etc. And the thought process was, I needed to be able to come into work every day and sit at my desk and focus on what my job is. Now, that's easy because I have somebody who's related to me who can do that. But if every business owner or entrepreneur recognizes I can't do everything, not only can I not do anything, I don't even know how to do everything. I'm not an accountant. I don't know IT. Focus on what you know. What is your critical inch? What is my core skill set? And then outsource it or find somebody else to bring in or find some sort of complementary skill set to help you get the rest of the tasks done that are maybe outside of your competencies.
Did that take you a while to figure out that you can't do everything yourself?
Yes. I'm by no means humble in that respect,
right.
but you know, again, I was taught that. I thought, okay, well, I can come in every day and go about my job, but you know, there's so many incremental things that you need. I need a system. I need phones. I need email. Oh my God, the email goes down, or, you know, the phone system goes down, or I don't have enough office supplies, or I need to hire and I need to do a whole bunch of things. Those things can pull you off your job. But part of being an entrepreneur is also recognizing that your job isn't 8 to 4 and 9 to 5. So what of those things can I push off to the end of the day or the beginning of the day so that my core time in my office is not just for my clients and my candidates or the people that I work with, but it's also for my staff?
It's interesting. I've always maintained that entrepreneurs, by our nature, we're control freak, maybe a bit strong, but maybe it's not that strong, but we, you yep. know, we like to be in control and to give up some control, different aspects mm-hmm. of our business. I think it's tough for a lot of entrepreneurs to admit that they, you know, they can't do the bookkeeping themselves, you know,
yep.
for midnight, you know, that's just not going to work, that they're better to farm it out. So, but I think the sooner an entrepreneur learns those lessons, the faster their business will grow. Is that a
well, fair? Yeah, I think that's fair. What I was going to add to that, Pat, is that, you know, we think that because we go into business for ourselves, that we just know business. But business is a big, broad word. And so what is it about each silo of business? There's the human resources, there's sales and marketing, there's finance and accounting, there's technology and network support and security, there's procurement. I mean, there's so many facets of it that if we really think that we know all aspects of business and that we can contribute at a high competency level in all areas, well, then you're awfully lucky, because I don't know anybody who could do that. And I think the sooner we get to a place where we recognize what our critical inch is and what our own core competencies are, then you know how to build around yourself. If you don't think if you think you're good at everything, then you don't know what you're lacking.
Do you find when you're talking to a new entrepreneur that maybe, you know, comes to you for advice or any advice you give our listeners? I mean, you know, the statement you just said about all of the different aspects of business, it can be daunting. Let's be honest. If someone's mm-hmm. thinking of starting a business and they're listening to this recording and they hear, you know, all of the different aspects that make up mm-hmm. a business, what advice would you give to a listener that may not be ready to start their own business because of the fear of all of the different aspects of business that they may not know. And let's assume, Sari, that they don't have a big budget, so they may not be able to farm everything out in the beginning. What advice would you give them?
Well, and I can appreciate that, Pat, because, you know, when we started here, we didn't either. Like I said, you know, I have a partner who's helping me do a lot of it, and we hired as we needed to, and we grew and we bought and we expanded as we needed to over the course of the 2.5 years. And I agree with you. The first thing that comes to mind of a new business owner is, what are my costs every day? And how much revenue do I have coming in? And so, well, I don't want to mitigate the critical nature of that. We have to sell. Everyone has to have a service or a product to sell, and they have to have revenue coming in, or they're not building a business. They're building a hobby. But if the advice I can give to people would be, you know, the one thing about entrepreneurs is that we're risk takers. We're prepared to take risk. We've got an appetite, and we've got an understanding of what our tolerance is for that risk. So before somebody jumps into a business because they think they have a good idea, think about the skill sets that you're going to need to bring that good idea to market. And like I said, not every business owner is necessarily a good entrepreneur. Entrepreneurs need to really evaluate what their appetite is for risk, what is the viability of your business, and what are the critical pieces I need to get this off the ground. Human resources, not a critical piece. Finance might be, you know, and then what is your critical piece? What are you bringing to the table that now you don't need to get somewhere else? And it doesn't have to be in a pricey way. If you're just in a startup, you may have only a little bit of clerical work. Go get a co-op student. There's amazing co-op programs through some of these schools where these students will come and work for you for 4 to 6 weeks. They could be accounting students. They could be administrative students. They could be marketing students, but they're free. And so anything as an entrepreneur that's going to take work off your plate so you can focus on, again, your critical inch is always time well spent. And if the cost works out because there is no cost and you're getting, you know, free talent or students that are helping to broaden their skill set as well, then it's a benefit. But it all comes back to how much appetite do I have for risk? Because if you don't have a lot, this is going to be a very short-lived business if you don't see success in the first 3 to 6 months, which is frankly normal for all small businesses.
So you were in a unique situation. You know, you had years of experience in the industry that you chose to start your business in. But I'm sure, you know, despite that, or that you still had some marketing challenges back in the beginning. Is that a fair comment to make? And if so, what were some of those challenges and how did you overcome them?
Well, I mean, just because I have a network to leverage off of doesn't make it any, it just makes it a little bit easier in terms of who to contact. But just like any new business, I can pick up the phone and call people that I know, but nobody knows what recruiting in motion is. And as you had discussed when we first started this segment, nobody in the city is doing video integration. So it was a lot of legwork and educating people and leveraging the people that I know. And I admit there was a lot of times where you sit back and ask yourself, do I believe in me enough to make this work? Because I'm the backbone. And if I don't believe in me, I can't convince the 5 or 6 people around me to believe in me. So, you know, that's why I say to you, a lot of this thought process isn't just a good idea. It's a lot of research. It's a lot of legwork. You know, before I ended up at Recruiting in Motion, I looked at all different kinds of opportunities. I'm not sure I ever thought it was going to be an entrepreneurial one. I thought I'd end up working somewhere else someday. But as you go through the motions and educating yourself on your industry, your competition, how business works, whether I quickly came to a realization that there was actually a space for me to wiggle out and carve a special niche for myself by changing the way that we go about doing business. So if you're somebody who's looking to start a business, what makes you unique? What is it about your organization that is either reinventing the wheel or is changing an already existing business process that you feel 100% confident about that you can bring to market? And then people will buy into it if you do. If you're still uncertain because you're like, geez, I'm starting this business, I'm hoping it's going to work, you're going to have a real tough time.
Thanks. We're almost out of time, Sari. Just a couple last questions for you. Has there been a book or books that influenced you or continue to influence you in terms of the way you do your business?
There's a book and a quote. I read, I'm a big believer on the Steve Jobs book. And the reason behind it is because the concept and the preface behind him was always around the concept of thinking different. And I think we hold that here every day that we come into work. If we were here to replicate how every other recruiting firm works in this city, we wouldn't have even survived a year. We have to go into every relationship, every interview, every client meeting, everything with, what can I do better? What can I do differently out there that's existing today, but would bring a better value to the job seeker or a better value to the client that helps enhance the process for all of us? The other piece that I'm a big fan of, the quote that I really like to reiterate is a Maya Angelou quote, which is, and I'll butcher it a bit, but it isn't what you say or do, it's how you make people feel. Because there's been a lot of times in my career where I've placed people, I've interviewed people, and they've walked out of here and they may say all the right things, we may place them, they may have success, but it's how you make them feel. Job search in my space or client interfacing or client interaction is not just about the words that come out of your mouth and the intake of words. It's about the vibe and the feeling somebody has when you leave. And if you want a residual partnership with your clients, you've got to constantly make them feel good, not just give them lip service.
That's a great thought to end the segment, Sari. Where can listeners find out more about Recruiting in Motion?
So you can find us on our website at www.recruitinginmotion.com, or you can reach me directly at either Sari@recruitinginmotion.com, or my number here is 613-627-0777, extension 300, and happy to answer any more questions.
Thanks, Sari. It was a real pleasure spending time with you. Thanks very much.
Me too, Pat. Thank you.
If your company or organization is looking to improve your marketing, go to the Extension Marketing website at extmarketing.ca and download the free ebook, 7 Steps to Marketing Success.